I'm sorry, Wilson! I'm sorry! Wilson! I can't! Wilson! Wilson!
Ship. Out of danger.
Yes.
Don't grieve him. Just logical. The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Or the one.
People will lose hope.
They won't. You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. That's what I can be.
No, you can't. You're not.
I'm whatever Gotham needs me to be. Because sometimes, truth isn't good enough. Sometimes people deserve more. Sometimes people deserve to have their faith rewarded.
Everybody, it's a special edition coaching carousel of the Air Raid podcast brought to you by the writing staff of VivaTheMatadors.com. I have Jonathan with me. Say hi, Jonathan.
Evening, Ryan. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. It's kind of weird not having a football game this week.
Yeah, it is. It's weird, and it's also weird to be prepping for one here in about a month or so.
Yeah, going from not having a bye week to like the last couple weeks has been like, I don't know what to do with myself. But cool thing that we've got today for everybody is we have Mickey Peters coming on in just a few minutes. For those of you that don't know who Mickey is, he is Jay Samaro before Jay Samaro. he was Jay Samaro before it was cool. And I don't care who thinks I'm crazy. He's got the stats to back it up. But we have him coming on. We're going to get his take on some of the changes that are going around the Texas Tech in Lubbock, and then we'll take a look at everything going on around the country. But first, Jonathan, I want to get your take on the good. Why is it that it's a good thing that Trey Haverty, Mike Smith, and Kevin Curtis are out the door?
To me, it shows a little bit of cohesion and a little bit of cooperativeness, if that's a word, between Gibbs and Cliff. Everybody knows when Cliff came on, he hired all his friends. But now with Gibbs coming in, he brought in one of his guys, Spavital. But now it looks like that Gibbs and Cliff are on the same page. Gibbs has proven to Cliff that the defensive side of his friends, they aren't necessarily getting the job done to the way that Gibbs wants. I know there could be some people could say that there's been just a clash of styles, but when you have a defensive coordinator like David Gibbs, you want him to have his own guys. You want him to be able to do everything he can to the best of his ability, and that does include having your own guys. It was nice that they were able to stay on for a year, almost like an internship, if you will, because I'm sure they were actively looking for outside employment. Wouldn't surprise me at all if these guys pick something up pretty quickly in January, especially Mike Smith. So it's good to see some change. I know everybody was wanting to see some change, especially on the defensive side. So we can just go ahead and get that ball rolling and start allowing fewer points and fewer rushing yards.
Yeah, and I really think this is a good and bad thing for us. The whole kind of rhetoric of, you know, Kingsbury hired his friends. Yes, that's true, he did. But these are all guys that were doing very well and up and coming in the coaching ranks. You go to Trey Haverty. He was on Gary Patterson's staff from 2007 to 2012. You know he knows something about defense. You're not around on Gary Patterson's defensive staff working with safeties and linebackers and then receivers and then back to safeties. You're not on that staff for that long without knowing something about defense. And, you know, the same thing with Mike Smith. I mean, for how well-regarded he is in the NFL, especially with Rex Ryan and some of the other guys from that coaching tree, you just got to really say we're losing some of our recruiting. We're what we loved about him, they would go to bat for Texas Tech. Even if they were fired, they'd probably still go out there and recruit. It's just more of a, kids come to play for the coach sometimes more than the university, and we've kind of seen that. Cool note is I just heard that one of the Buffalo Bills assistants might on the defensive side might be going to a college program.
Oh.
As an assistant there, kind of like Mike Smith did in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be, like I said, on the Buffalo Bills staff. Rex Ryan is the coach there, so it might just be a perfect avenue for Mike Smith just to slide right back in there.
Oh, definitely.
So, as we've noted a couple weeks ago, he will not be the second best known car salesman in Lubbock. all these guys are going to go on to do great things. If you heard the montage that I just played at the beginning of this podcast, you'll know that there's some mixed feels, as it were, through all that. So that's all I got for good and bad. I want to get Mickey on here.
Hell yeah.
Okay, so let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Mickey Peters.
This is Texas Tech University.
We inspire.
We discover.
We succeed.
We ride.
We share our traditions.
And our innovations.
We are champions.
We work hard.
And play louder.
We are many things.
But wherever we go.
And whatever we do.
Every day.
Every day.
Todos los días.
Every day.
Every day, we are Red Raiders.
We have Mickey Peters with us. He's taken some time to join us. Just before I introduce Mickey officially and get him into the conversation, I will say, just like I said in the intro, that Mickey Peters was Jason Morrow before Jason Morrow, since everybody thinks Jason Morrow is awesome. If you look at Morrow's stats his senior year or junior year in 2013, he had 106 receptions, 1350 receiving yards, 7 touchdowns, and he averaged 12.8 yards per catch. If you look at Mr. Peters here in 2003, catching from Simmons, he had 78 receptions, 975 yards receiving for 12 touchdowns, and he averaged 12.5 yards per catch. So obviously, he was a senior when I was a freshman. I loved seeing him out of the slot, doing the things he did, and it was a great time. So, again, thank you, Mickey, for being on.
Thank you. And also, you got to mention, I also had Wes Welker, Carlos Francis, and Nehemiah Glover catching passes too. So it was hard to come by trying to catch passes.
That is true. That is true.
But a lot of talent on the field there.
Yeah. You kind of wonder why Simmons threw for so many yards that year. It's a legend from now, but was BJ really playing on a torn ACL?
No, he was. I guess it was against Iowa State, and I'm not sure who he threw a touchdown to. I'm pretty sure it was Carlos Francis in the left corner of the end zone, and he jumped up over the line because he's only 5'10". Well, yeah, he's 6'1", but he jumped up to try to see, caught the touchdown, and he tore that ACL right then.
Oh man.
How many games did he have after that? Because I knew he was hampered against Oklahoma. I knew he was hampered against Texas going down the stretch. But how many games was it?
I don't know the exact number, but let's see here. So probably it was 5 games in, I think.
The majority of the season.
So the rest of the season. I think it was Oklahoma State was the next game, or Missouri was the next game after that. And those two games were tough on us. And then it was Baylor. We played Baylor, Texas, and Oklahoma. And it changed BJ. It did. He wasn't able to move out of the pocket at all. And that his legs, you know, kind of helped him out a little bit too. So it hindered him. But he might have thrown for 7,000 yards.
Yeah. You kind of noticed that, you know, even with his good arm, he would kind of force the issue sometimes or not be able to move through on that leg as well. And maybe that was the reason why kind of interceptions went up through the season.
Well, he was already kind of a Brett Favre-esque, but he did. And he tried to get the ball out quick, you know, sometimes too quick, I would say. But, you know, when you're throwing for 5,800 yards.
Yeah. You just kind of roll with it at that point.
Yeah, you're kind of rolling with it at that point. And, you know, it was a great year, and it was all fun and whatnot. You know, I always look back and wish that he would have, you know, he was my roommate for 3 years until our senior year, and he went and lived by himself after that. But, you know, I could always see the frustration on, you know, with him, and I always knew he was going to be really good and whatnot. But, you know, and then when he did tear that ACL, I was feeling pretty bad, you know. And nobody really said, coaches didn't tell us or anything, but BJ basically was like, yeah, it's tore. I'm pretty sure that's one of the main reasons why Coach Leach doesn't, that one and maybe another reason, but doesn't tell injuries.
He doesn't even tell it to his team. No comment. We don't discuss injuries at all.
Well, there's a lot.
He won't even tell the player.
Mike Leach, you know, he's always been a different cat. He doesn't say much to the team anyway, so.
So speaking of, before we get in, because this whole pod is, since we don't have a game, obviously, it's kind of going into the coaching carousel that's going on at Tech right now on the defensive side and then around the country. But before we get into that, Jonathan was telling me you were actually recruited as a quarterback.
Correct.
And were you redshirted in 99?
Yes, I was redshirted.
Okay, so you had that last year with Spike Dykes.
Right. I was basically the last recruiting class. The next year there was a couple guys that were still his at Leach kept, but we were basically the last full recruiting class with BJ and Carlos and Toby Cecil and Rex Richards and all those guys.
Okay. How did that transition go for y'all, going from someone like Spike to someone like Mike Leach?
Well, you know, like for us, we were still pretty new into it. You know, it was pretty tough already. I mean, we were only there, think about it, we were there for 4 or 5 months with Spike, and then Leach came in, and yeah, it was a totally different deal. I mean, night and day difference from Spike and Leach. You know, one's a great talker and gets to know his kids real well, and Leach is kind of to himself and on the other end of the spectrum. You know, not to say anything's worse than the other. It was just kind of a little bit more different, and it took probably a year for, I would say, more of the upperclassmen to get used to than us, because, you know, we weren't really there long enough to just adapt totally to Spike.
Right. I was actually going over some film from 2002 and 2003, and I had forgotten how many plays y'all ran under center. Those little
sweeps,
jet sweeps and quick screens. And I saw, you know, the bread and butter was a BJ under center or Kingsbury under center, and he would take the snap, do like a little fake pump fake screen, and then hand it off to Torian that, you know, he'd cut it up the middle, things like that. And yeah, that's kind of gone away, obviously, but I'm surprised. I was like, man, we're under center quite a bit.
Quite a bit. We did run center under center a lot, you know, and that really Leach gave the opportunity for the quarterback to, whatever his preferences were, he kind of let them be at that point in time early on at Tech. You know, we ran a lot, a lot under center. I think, I want to say Cliff liked to be under center more than BJ did, but it could be vice versa. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure Cliff, he was under center quite a bit. And then, you know, we did a lot of stuff against Texas those 2 years of, they ran a lot of man-to-man, and we did a lot of, you know, running against them and, you know, moving one way, coming back the other way, and kind of misdirection type stuff against them. And, you know, we did a lot of hurt to them. So, you know, and all that was under center.
Yeah. So your senior year, 2003, is there any part of that season you want back, a play that got away from you? I know the easy one to go to is probably
University of Texas.
Yeah.
No doubt. No doubt.
I even saw on your second touchdown catch, it was a – I didn't see your exact route. It looked like a little just a straight out, because it wasn't really towards the corner of the end zone. It was more towards the pylon. And Simmons put it right on you, and you kind of caught it. You know, you laid out for it, caught it, did a tumble, and it looked like you wanted to get right back up, but it looked like you were exhausted.
I was exhausted, but something happened to my hip on that play that you can kind of look, and I don't know, it's my left leg. It kind of gets jarred, and it did something to my hip and my groin, and I will never forget. I dropped a pass in the fourth quarter for a first down, and that would have put me over probably 1,000 yards that year. Mm. I would say that would probably be the one. But I was, you know, not to make excuses. I mean, heck, I'm 35 years old. I can make all the excuses I want. But, you know, going over the middle, and the ball's kind of, you know, not behind me, but it was been a tough catch for me, but I should have caught it. And it would have been for a first down. And we got the first down anyway, and we went down and scored. You know, it didn't really hinder us, but, you know, it's one of the few that I dropped that I should have caught that day. It was a corner route. It was called 35 naked at the time. I think Cliff still runs it. Eric Morris the other day asked me what was that play I ran, because I caught it Cliff's senior year in the corner of the end zone, which it looks like an out, but it was a corner, and BJ just kind of flattened me out.
Yeah. Because I don't remember ever seeing that type of play right to the pylon. It's usually more kind of over your shoulder to the back corner.
Right, right. Which it was 15 yards, so we're running it at 10 and, you know, trying to break towards the pylon or at an angle, 45-degree angle, what we can. And it just – wherever the ball leads us is kind of where we where it takes us. He's basically throwing us open.
Yeah. Before I completely hog the conversation, because I think this is the same thing that happened with Tremaine. Is there any one play or is there any one drive in that where you're just like, you know, I don't think it's completely fair to leave it all on Keith there at the end, for good or for bad. Is there any one drive as an offense that you're all like, man, we just don't need to leave this to the kicking team and we just didn't get it done?
No, you know, we don't ever think about that, and we're always trying to go score. We don't ever want to leave it to a kicker, you know, to either make a kick or to not make a kick. We feel like he is part of the team and whatnot, but, you know, he's still a kicker, you know. And, you know, we felt like every game that nobody could stop us that year. Everybody was out there, you know, doing a really good job catching the football, and BJ was, you know, giving the ball to us really well, and especially that game, you know, we felt like we should score every time, and it didn't matter when it was. I think there was a one drive, if I remember correctly, that we went for it on fourth down on our own territory, and I think we had a quick reverse to, you know, like one of those quicks that Mike used to run, like you said a while ago, under center.
It's kind of like a
to West.
Yeah, it's almost a sweep.
Yeah, right. And I think, if I remember correctly, it got blown up, and we didn't make the first down. And we stopped them. I think they threw a pick the next or two plays. Or no, I think they actually went down and scored. So that put us down, like, I think 10, and then we had to go down right after that and go score again. And, you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be the best that we could. And, so, you know, I wouldn't say this the total – I think it was more of a team effort and team goal just to be good every play. And, you know, I just kind of how it didn't end up in our favor that game, you know, but it is what it is.
So, obviously, you, I believe your redshirt freshman year, you were still listed as a quarterback. Is that correct?
No, I was a receiver at that time.
Oh, you did? You got switched over at that point in 2000?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In the spring of 2000, I think it was Cliff was obviously number one, BJ was two, and then there was a guy named Nathan Chandler who actually went to Iowa. He transferred to a JUCO in California, who came in with me and BJ, and he was ahead of me too, and I was like the fourth guy. And I saw the writing on the wall. You know, I was a 2A and 4A state champion in the hurdles, and I can run pretty good. And I thought, heck, I'm not going to just sit around and watch these guys play when I think I can go somewhere else and contribute with this team, you know, for the team. So Leach came over probably a week too late for me, and he asked me, "Hey, you want to try H?" Actually, he moved me to H at first, and I think I ran a corner route, and he moved me back. He moved me over to Y and said, "No, you're better fit for a Y position." And so I stayed there from then on.
Yeah, you did have some speed on your first touchdown against Texas on that little slant. I think you split three or four Texas defenders, and they barely laid a hand on you on your way to the end zone. Just went right through them. So I was impressed. You covered about 15 yards in about a second, looked like.
Yeah, I gained probably 15 pounds, and I think that hurt me a little bit of just, you know, keeping my actual speed. But, you know, I did all right, I guess. You know, that one play, they were hotting. I had a hot. They were blitzing, and that was my assignment was to, if they were hot, you know, take it in on a slant. And really kind of got lucky. I think the guy tried to undercut me, and it was open and made actually a move right there at the end and kind of got in the end zone.
Well, it was pretty whatever it was. I was reliving the my freshman year the other day watching it. So
I'll say this. My wife still gets tired of me watching that game. I watch that game more than I watch any game that I ever played. Even the one that we beat Texas, I watched.
Really?
That. Yeah. Well, it's on YouTube. That other one isn't on YouTube. Yeah, you know, I thought I played one of my best games that game, but she leaves the room when fourth quarter comes around, or she walks in and sees it, and she goes, "Oh no." she gets the kids and walks out of the house.
It's gonna be a while, kids. Jonathan, do you have anything for Mickey before we get into
going into that 2003 season? Did y'all have any idea that BJ was going to do what he did?
No, yes, we knew, you know, because we practiced with him every, you know, every day for 4 years. He's our friend, and we're out there with him every day. You know, it's kind of, everybody's like, "How's it a surprise?" And there were people always asking. I'm like, y'all got to understand, this guy is good. I mean, I don't, I mean, everybody after the season was like, who's better, Cliff or BJ? And I'm like, you know, these are my friends. I'm not going to just say who's better.
No, but seriously.
Yeah, who's better?
Well, you know, here's the thing with Cliff and the early on. The early on, we weren't very good. I look back and we weren't very good. And he basically got us over the hump of being a running football team to, you know, being a passing team. I think BJ threw the ball better as, you know, more quicker, had a better quicker release and whatnot. You know, Cliff was just smart, just like he is now, you know, offensive-wise. He's very intelligent, and he's just a very intelligent person anyway. And not the fact that BJ isn't. BJ is a very intelligent person too. It's just that BJ would come out there and the ball would get there quick. And, you know, I'm not going to say who's better, but we, well, you know.
And I'll put, this, I'll put it this way. Who throws a better ball?
Well, BJ.
Who would you rather to catch, you know, catch it?
Well, I don't know.
Because Jermaine just went, he's like, well, they're all good, but if I had to pick, it'd be. Because he caught from Harrell, Sticks, Potts, and Daigie.
Oh, wow.
So he caught from all four, and we basically asked him, and he said, you know, if we had to win a game, it was Harrell, and he probably threw the best ball as well. You know, Potts had the cannon, Daigie had the touch, but all around it was Harrell, so.
Yeah, and BJ threw a really tight spiral. Cliff's ball was kind of a knuckleball at times.
Keep you on your toes. Huh? Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. Well, you know, but what made Cliff so great is, like, you know, well, I'll say this. Early on, you know, we were still learning. We were young, bunch of young receivers, still trying to learn the offense, still trying to learn. And then by the time we were seniors, those 2 years make a big difference. And regardless who the quarterback was, we were going to be a lot better, if that makes sense. And so, you know, BJ was quick release, get the ball out, boom, everything was great. Cliff was more of a dink and dunk type guy. He's similar to what his offense is now as a quarterback. And you know, they were both great, and I would never trade either or for the times that I was there.
And what about that that 0-2 Tangerine Bowl? I think that was Cliff's last game. that was an impressive game.
Well, funny story. So I'm trying to think here. We got there. I know it was an early game. It was before Christmas. It was like a December 21st or 22nd. It was always the early game. One of the first first bowl games of the season. And I remember getting there, and every year we're always playing in either Houston or, you know, San Antonio and the places that we've already been. Everybody's already been, and we're always like, okay, we don't want to go back there. When we found out, everybody was wanting the Tangerine Bowl. And when we found out, when we found out that it was a Tangerine Bowl, and we're going to Orlando, Florida, in the summer, we were just all for it. I mean, we were pumped. And then we found out it was Clemson. I don't even know if we even realized who we were playing at first. We just wanted to go to Orlando, Florida, 70-degree weather, nice, you know. I think when we got back to Lubbock, there was a foot of snow on the ground. So when we got there, me, Cliff, Trey Haverty, and Lamont Anderson and Jason Wesley. There was a time where we could go out, like out on the town, and we had a curfew about 12 o'clock. So we all went down to Church Street, and we pull up there and we go to this nightclub, and we look over and we see Clemson there. And Clemson comes over, and because Trey Haverty knows a guy that was from Plano that they played in high school against, and he was a linebacker, and they come over there and start talking, and they start talking about how they are doing two-a-days And we were like, we're about to kill these guys. Because they didn't want to be there. You know, they thought they were in a better we loved being in Orlando. We loved being at that bowl game. They didn't want to be there. They were doing two-a-days. They were working hard. And I called a buddy of mine and said, hey, I'm just going to let y'all know this right now. We're going to beat the brakes off these guys. do what you want.
Call Vegas.
Yeah, I was like, we're about to beat the brakes off these guys. So
kind of like 2004 with Cal not wanting to be there.
It was very similar. Very, very similar.
I mean, it seems like that's how it is in bowl games with, you know, kind of, you can even go to 2008 when, after the OU beating, we didn't really want to be in the Cotton Bowl because we had our sights set so much higher than that, and Ole Miss came out and beat us. And I'm pretty sure that's the way it's going to go with LSU.
That's 100% correct. I watched a practice at the Cotton Bowl when, you know, that 2008 year, and went to the Cotton Bowl, and, you know, one of our practices was at the old Texas Stadium. And, I mean, you could tell, hey, these guys, they don't want to be here. They don't want to play. They didn't care. They might have cared. They might have said they cared. They just running around, you could just tell, like, hey, these guys.
You could even tell from the Baylor game. The season was over for them after the OU game.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
They were emotionally drained at that point. You know, kind of everything was kind of deflated after that point. I let Baylor hang around.
And I'm hoping you're right on this LSU deal.
Well, I mean, I see it. I mean, they're already talking smack on social media about how it's going to be 700 yards rushing for them, and, you know, they're going to beat us by however many points, and it's like, okay.
Well, I'm not going to say
that. People have said that too about Tech in the past, and look where that's got them.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody, you should just say, hey, everybody rushes 200-something yards on us. I mean, that's a given fact. We know that. We know y'all got a stud out there at running back too, but, you know, to me, it's all about, in an offense like theirs, this goes back to the fact that when we played Les Miles at Oklahoma State, we knew if we could get up on them, then it'd be tough for them to come back. You know, the only thing is, at Oklahoma State, they had a better quarterback. The quarterbacks there, they could throw the ball a bit better, and so it was more of a tougher time for us to beat Oklahoma State. Now at LSU, I really truly believe that, you know, their quarterback's play is very weak, and they have to, you know, do heavily on the running back. And if we can just get them a stop or a fumble, and you know, go down and score and get up on them, then it's going to be tough for them to come back on us, because throwing football is not their forte.
Well, I actually think if people want to know how this game is going to play out, just how I think it's going to play out, just go watch the 2005 Cotton Bowl game when we played Alabama. I think it was 13-10 at the final score, just a you know, drag out defensive struggle. They couldn't do much on offense because they weren't very good on offense, but they had a stout defense, and it just kind of worked out where it was evenly matched, and, you know, it came down to a last second field goal for them. But I think we're a little bit better on offense, but
I think we were a lot better on defense too, though.
Yeah, back then, everybody says that was the problem with the Mike Leach era, is that we didn't have a defense. And if you look at the numbers, we actually had a really, really good defense.
No, they were
back then.
Right. And it all goes back to the saying, we're not having great defenses. And those, the years were my years or my senior year, our defense was not good at all. We were all freshmen. We were all freshmen. We had maybe two seniors starting on defense. And
was that like Scaldy and Acock?
It was
were those the two seniors?
I think it was Acock, basically. Maybe the only senior.
There's people listening to this right now going,
that
who?
Have no idea.
Who are those people?
Ryan Acock, he's one of the best players in Tech history. That guy was really good for us. If it weren't for him, we would have been really, really bad.
You know, you go up and down with Dawson and who's the other one?
Keontae Dawson was there. Adel Duckett, he was
good. Duckett, yeah, Duckett. Mm-hmm.
And then we had Brock Stratton, who was our linebacker. But up front, we, you know.
Scaldi seemed to be too tall to be a linebacker. Was he a hybrid?
No, they so we ran the 4-3 back then, so he was an outside guy.
Okay. You could always tell him because he was about 3 inches taller than everybody else. He had that big neck guard, that neck
Yeah, he had a problem with his he had some kind of neck issues, and I'm not sure what it was, though.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's jump into what's going on with Tech right now, and then we'll jump over to kind of your take on college football coaching and politics as a whole. But you played, obviously, with Cliff. You played with Trey. You played with Kevin. You played with Mike. You know all these guys pretty well. How did you kind of see, or how was your reaction to kind of what went down last week?
You know, At first, I was surprised. I was surprised, but I wasn't surprised. Only reason I say I wasn't surprised is because with getting the new defense coordinator last year, I knew that, you know, him coming in and probably wanting his own guys in there and whatnot, that I'm not saying that they couldn't adapt to what they were doing. You know, he's more of a bend don't break type guy. Mike Smith, you know, likes to, he comes from Rex Ryan's type defense where, you know, we're going to get after the quarterback, we're going to blitz a lot. And, you know, there's two different types of, you know, brains and coaching philosophy there. And I'm not saying that it was probably hindered us this year or anything of that nature. It's just a little bit different
philosophy. We did.
Yeah, we said that a lot.
We called that on TCU.
TCU.
Right after the TCU game, the Monday press conference, Gibbs was responding to a question about late in the game. It was either late in the game or late in the first half. It was 3rd and 30, and I think everybody on the writing staff was calling for a blitz. Just sent, you know, get after Boykin. It's 3rd and 30, and Gibbs rushes 3, he drops 8, they get the first down on 3rd and 30, and then the next play was a touchdown right before halftime, and he was answering a question about it. And he goes, you know, there's those guys that want a zero blitz all the time and send the house and get after the quarterback, but the truth is, that only gets you beat faster. And then I immediately went to our writing forum and said, whoa, Gibbs just said something about Mike Smith. Because you're just, you know, he was in his earpiece headset all the time going, hey, we need to get after this. We need to get after this. So we thought there was a clash of styles there. We didn't think that Mike was going to be around too often. And to be honest, he's got other prospects. He's going to go back to the NFL and do great.
Oh, yeah, he will. He's a smart mind on football for sure. One of the toughest men I've ever been around, too. Really, really good guy, too. And, you know, and all I got to say about this, when first got hired on at Tech, this is even Cliff, you know, all of them, that, you know, I always felt that if things did go south, you know, for our program, I didn't want them to, because I know how much they love Texas Tech and how much they love the brand of Texas Tech, every one of them, Mike, Kevin, Cliff, Trey and Emo. I don't know Emo real well, but I know he loves Texas Tech too. And I just don't want them to have a bad taste in their mouth, you know, after if something went south, you know, for the brand. You know, you always got to look on different things that there might be one or two people that makes that brand you know, a little soft, and you know, you can't, the brand is bigger than those two people, and I don't think you can dwell on, you know, the salty part and just stay focused with the brand. And the Texas Tech brand is is one of the greatest brands. And I, that's what I just did not ever want them to feel, that they didn't ever like Texas Tech again, you know, in that type of sense. Because I've heard, you know, people in the past that have gone to their alma mater and things didn't work out the way they thought it should be. And now they're just kind of real, real bitter about their alma mater. And I did not want that for, you know, any of them.
I kind of get that feeling from Lincoln Riley.
What's that?
That he's a little bit kind of, he kind of holds a little bit against Texas Tech for how the kind of everything went down in 09. Oh. You know, he was, he's been there since you've been there. You probably didn't know who he was. He was a quarterback for a long time.
Yeah, I knew who he was.
Yeah. So, but, you know, he was the offensive coordinator for that bowl game with Ruffin being the head coach. And then everybody kind of wanted Ruffin to just kind of take over with how he had the team behind him. And everybody loved him. And then, you know, that kind of was – went with Tuberville and
– Right. You know, and that to me is – that's a tough situation. And I don't – you know, he's a Leach guy. You know, he's one of the true guys that's kind of stayed toward what Leach really, really does. Even though he does run the ball a lot. But, heck, I would run the ball a lot, too, if I had those two studs in the back. And, you know, I'm not saying that that guy that takes the snap is any good, but those two studs that he has in the
BM.
A lot. That's the guy that's called – they call Baker.
We call him BM, but that's okay.
BM, is that what we call him? Okay. But no, and what I'm saying is he is a Leach guy, and, you know, and that's fine. Leach taught him everything, and he was in his office 24/7 with him, and, you know, he understands everything Leach does. And I'd be kind of the same way in that sense towards the powers to be of our university. I still kind of am, not going to lie.
Well, I mean, so we have this kind of void on the defensive side now. You've got, obviously, Haverty, Curtis, and Smith have all been kind of let go. A lot of people would say it's a class move by Kingsbury to keep him on as long as he did and allow that transition to happen. Who would you like to see come in? If you had any say in it at all, would you like to see come in and be a position coach?
Well, just anybody that Gibbs wants, really. You can't just start naming people and hope that they come in and fit in. I'll go with anybody that Gibbs says is qualified enough to go and be there. You know, you can't just start pulling guys from here to here to here and say, let's bring these guys in, because when it comes all down to it, Gibbs is the boss of the defense. And, you know, what goes says, and what goes is his way. And so whoever he has under those different position coaches, then they all have got to be tuned into the same thing that and believe in the same thing that he does.
Yeah, because you don't want to have that clash that you did with Mike.
Well, I'm not saying they had clash. I don't know what happened or when it went on in the locker room or in the offices. You know, I don't know what went on. I just
mean like a clash of schemes, a clash of of what you're trying to do in a certain situation.
Right. Everybody's got to be 100% on the same page.
So you're telling me that we're not going to get Nick Saban?
You telling me we're not bringing Ruffin McNeil back? I mean, come on.
I would love Ruff to come
back. Ruffin's going
to
be the DL coach. You just got to go with him.
I love Ruff. I love that man.
Oh, my goodness. And see, the great thing about talking to you, Mickey, is, you know, you were there at the early years where you basically have connections to this entire coaching tree that's gone on throughout college football right now. You mean – you were there with Art Briles. You were there with Dana. You were there with Sonny. You were there, obviously, with Ruffin. You know, you have all these experiences and stories that you could just you know, we just need to sit back and just let you tell story after story after story, because that would be gold. We would love to hear all that.
That's funny. I've got a neighbor who just took the head job in Denton at a new high school that's opening up called Denton-Braswell, and he's going to be a stud over there. And it's a funny story. He used to be an air raid guy. Now he's kind of gone to the West, Gus Malzahn type offense, because in high school you kind of have to run the ball a bit more than you do in college. But the other day we were going to watch a football game at Texas Stadium, and Joey Florence called him, and he goes, "Hey, Coach Florence, I got a guy named Mickey Peters here." And he's like, "How do I know that guy? How do I know?" He goes, "Nah, he played football at Tech." He goes, "Oh, okay." He goes, "I'll tell you what, Coach, one of the most fun people I've ever been around, because he has a lot of Mike Leach stories."
Yeah, see, I'm going to have to bring you back and just shut up and just be like, go. Because I know there's some that you just can't tell, in a public forum.
There's a lot that you can't tell.
Yeah, so, but, you know, it'd just be good to hear. We'll keep it B-roll. We just won't use any of it. But that way when my kids grow up, I can be like, this is what you missed. This is what you missed. Okay, so obviously we brought up Ruffin. We were kind of seeing what college football has become in the last 3, 5, 10 years, whatever it has been, where something that used to be unheard of 8, 9-win coaches getting the boot, is kind of becoming the norm here, even to the point where I think the only thing that saved Les Miles was his team carrying him off the field after the last game.
Those fans would have rioted if they had canned him.
God, it just doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, you look at the I don't know if it's – I mean, we could probably talk all day about this, Mickey, but I don't know if it's because of the new playoff system or what. But these are the openings, or at least at one time had an opening. I'll run down the list real quick. Georgia, South Carolina, USC, Miami, Virginia Tech, Missouri, Maryland, UCF. Talk about going from BCS win to 0-12 in a couple of years. That was rough. Minnesota, Illinois, Syracuse, Iowa State, North Texas, Hawaii, University of Louisiana, Monroe, Memphis, Rutgers, Virginia, and East Carolina, obviously. Georgia picked up Kirby Smart. Looks like Muschamp is going to take the South Carolina job. USC kept Clay Helton on. Miami picked up Mark Wright from Georgia, and Justin Fuente from Memphis is going to Va Tech. What's your take with what's going on in college football? Have you ever been kind of around a situation where there were this many coaching openings, head coaching openings at one time?
I don't think I have, actually. There's always been several that are. It's kind of weird how the tree just kind of, if one guy takes a play or takes a job, then it all kind of trickles down, after that. But no, I don't think I've ever seen this many schools. And, a lot of them are bowl eligible teams and, good coaches that have been good coaches for a while. And, I don't know if it's a trend. And a lot of it, you look at it, a lot of these guys are a lot of older guys that are leaving, and they think that we have to get in, a lot younger guys. And I'm not saying anything bad about my buddy Cliff. I think that's great. But, I don't know if it's society today in general about winning, and that's all we're really caught up about. And I understand, that is all it's about, is but there's more to it. I mean, this is college sports. We're not here to play football. We're here to get an education and further our lives and get smarter and be successful in society. But it seems like society has put money in front of everything, which is fine. That happens. But still, like Mark Wright kind of getting let go at an 8-3 team, and it's unbearable to me. It's kind of crazy to me to even think that happens. But you know, like you, but in the same sense too, is, you know, the coach can leave anytime he wants, and the university can't really say anything about it. So, you know, you got a double-edged sword too.
Yeah, I just feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were obviously a part of the team, but I just got into Texas Tech. I was not a Texan from birth. It came when I was accepted to the university, came out here, fell in love with Lubbock. But it just seemed like 8 wins is a good year, especially, you know, knocking off. Well, A&M was, we did that quite often. But knocking off OU or Texas, one of those each year, having 8 wins, 9 wins, being ranked, that was always kind of like, hey, that's a good year for us. And people don't want to come to Lubbock, especially if they're in the national title hunt. But that was just kind of our thing, is 8-9 wins, ranked somewhere between 15 and 25. And we just went about our business, and that was just kind of who we are. And now it just seems, especially with this college football playoff, I mean, if you're not in the top 4, what does it matter after that? Does it really matter that you're ranked 24th in the country? Does it really matter that you're a 9-win team if you're not getting closer to that playoff spot? And, you know, I was talking to an OU friend of mine, and they just couldn't understand that. They were just like, what do you mean you're not trying to play for a national championship every year? And I said, well, I mean, it'd be nice, but we're just kind of going out there trying to screw up y'all season at the end of the day. But, you know, obviously correct me, because I really don't know.
Well, you know, as a player, no player goes out there and hopes to win 8 games. I remember going into Holgerson's office right before the season, and I went down the list and I said, Coach, I just going down the list right here, and we can beat every one of these teams. The only team that I'm nervous about, because they still know our offense, they still call out our plays every time we line up at the line of scrimmage, is Oklahoma.
They still do that, apparently.
I'm telling you, they know every play of ours. I don't know how they knew. Well, I mean, Leach was there for
1 year.
But they still ran that same offense for a year or two or after that. But still, I mean, we walk up the line of scrimmage and they're going, watch 92, watch 92, you know. And so, I don't know. It's crazy to me. That's all I really can say.
And I saw a lot of it in the fan sentiment this week over with those people from College Station, where they were saying they didn't want to play the Texas Bowl because there's no bowl good enough for them, because they should have been in one of the top 4 spots this year. So it was like you said, Ryan, it was getting either blown top 4 out, or bust.
Being blown out every single one of your losses is being in the top 4. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, those people aren't that bright anyway.
Well, I mean,
but you see it in a lot of different fan bases.
I mean, you're kind of starting to see it in the Tech fan base, which is crazy. They're talking about we'll never compete for a national championship unless we run the ball more and play, you know, solid defense. And I'm like, we have the leading rusher in the conference.
Here's the thing is we have to run the offense that we do right now, because we're never going to get those big hogs up front like LSU and Alabama does. We never will. Nobody's going to – I mean, I love Lubbock to death, you know, and when Cliff and – all those guys went up there, they try to sell Lubbock, you know, and they still had a hard time, you know, getting every guy they want. You know, Spike Dykes tried to do that. I mean, we tried to be defense, 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 and he did a good job of it, but we still weren't, we still weren't the Alabamas.
Well, I think that's what makes Texas Tech great, is we were an outlier. We were one of the first outliers. We were the first to break away for any type of consistency, for any type of longevity with that type of system and coaching players up that may not have been the 4- and 5-star recruits, you know, making our name on Wes Welkers and Mickey Peters and Nehemiah Glover and on down the list, you know, Dola and Emo and all those guys, and still hanging with the big boys. And I think that's where we got our our, you know, our swagger and knowing that we can hang with any team.
That's exactly right. And if you look, I mean, the Big 12 changed the way you look at the Big 12 now. It's 60 points or you're not going to win a game, you know. And we did that. Texas Tech did that. You can't tell me Oklahoma did that, Texas did that. No, we did that. Texas Tech, Mike Leach did that. Because they would come into our house and they knew that if they didn't put up 50, 40, 50 points, that then it's going to be a struggle. And if they're going to run the football, then they're going to have to run the football all day and, you know, and get out up on us real quick and, you know, stop us for, you know, a couple drives. Because if they can't get anything going, then it's over. It would have been over right then because we're going to score 40 points and they can't, you know. If you can't run the football like LSU can't throw the football, it's going to be a tough time if we, you know, go in there and do our business, get up on them real quick, because it's going to be tough for them to
kind of like Arkansas this year.
Exactly.
Where we got on them, we were able to stop the run early. And I think in the second quarter, they held the ball for 13 and plus minutes, a time of possession in the second quarter, and we still were in comfortable position the entire game.
100%, 100%, correct. And here's the thing, with this playoff system, I'm an old school guy. I am. Everybody thinks I'm crazy for saying this, but I'm an old school guy. I think these four teams is good enough. And what I think should happen, I think maybe we go six teams to the Power Six conferences. And what we do is we take the winner of that conference. But everybody has a conference championship, and the winner of that conference championship goes on to the playoffs. It has nothing to do with those one loss teams. That conference championship is basically where you start as your playoff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even more old school than that, Mickey. Right. I liked it the old way.
I did too.
I mean, you know, they first complained that there wasn't enough objectivity, that there were too many biases in the sports writers and how they ranked polls, and there was always, you know, number one versus number three. You can never really get number one and number two together back for the national championship. And then the BCS came out, and then they complained that there wasn't enough, you know, there's too much, what does a computer know about football and rankings and everything? And they're not taking into account of how good we're playing right now. I mean, that was always Oklahoma's thing. They'd get beat early in the season like they did this year, and then they'll say, oh, well, no one's playing better football than us right now. Right. And it used to be playoffs were your season. You got to win. You got to win out.
Exactly right. And it's, to me, you know, if it's going to get watered down, like I think the NCAA tournament's great and everything in basketball, but nobody cares who the conference championship is. Nobody's watching college basketball right now. Nobody. And when college football comes on, they watch from week one until week 12.
Because week one matters.
Matters. Exactly. That is exactly right, and it'll get watered down. Like it's, I'm not saying it's getting watered down now. I mean, it's still.
Did anybody watch the conference games yesterday?
Well,
I didn't.
Well, I wasn't going to watch Iowa and Michigan State. That's boring.
The football. Punt fest, punt bowl.
or the Alabama. The only reason I watch Alabama is just to watch them big hosses up front run over people. That's the reason. I didn't, because everybody kind of already knew what it was going to be. That was the only game that really mattered was the Iowa State game. And, well, I guess you could say Clemson too. If Clemson got beat, they'd been knocked out too. But you know, I'm like you. In hindsight, truly, I'm like you. I like the old stuff. Didn't really think that was that big of a deal. Okay, you know, there would be, oh, this guy should be. And he should be. This team is number three. They can't get in to be, you know, to play for the national championship. And, you know what? They shouldn't have lost that game. They shouldn't have lost the game that they had.
And the funny thing to me is, when at first, I'll have to let Jonathan get in here eventually. the funny thing to me is when this first started coming up in the late 2000s about we need a playoff system. It was because of teams on the outside like Boise State and TCU. That were not from a big conference.
Right.
And they were saying, well, they should have a chance to play for the national title or, you know, because they can beat anybody. And yes, they beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. TCU went to the Rose Bowl and won it. But now the way they've structured it, that if you're not in a Power Five conference, which Boise is not, mm-hmm. you have no shot.
You have no shot.
So now you've actually restricted the playing field instead of expanding it. And I think that's, you know, a bunch of crap to begin with. I'm with you. I think if you want to be in that position at the end of the year, win your games.
Yeah, and it's sad that, you know, we got a Power Six conferences, and the little guys doesn't matter. And that's not what college football is really, truly all about. College football is a step up from high school football, right? And you're playing for a school. You're playing for something that you really deeply care about. It's not about money. It's not about anything other than you're playing for your school and trying to get an education. And with money and the way it is nowadays, it's totally different. And for somebody in the smaller conferences as, you know, Houston or North Texas, whoever, to be able to play in something to that fact, then, you know, why do we play?
So let me ask you a question, Mickey. So you said it wasn't about money. Did you ever get offended or upset or think about suing somebody whenever you may or may not have plugged in NCAA 2002 or 2003 and saw number 86 and your likeness? Your height and your weight, or you pass somebody in the dorm and you see them playing and you're like, hey, that's me. Where's my money?
No, man, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
I know, right?
You know, I didn't think about money then. I was thinking about, hey, that's cool, man.
That is cool.
They got me. I'm really good on this. That's crazy, you know?
Oh, that's great.
No, I didn't think about that. Really, our society has everything to do with everything that we're saying here, from the coaches to what you're saying about the NCAA and everything. I think our society has changed, and I don't know if it's for the better, but I think there's going to be more changes to come for the NCAA, and I don't know if it'll hurt it, but time will tell.
You're never going to make everybody happy. There's always going to be people complaining. People complained before the BCS, and then everyone said that, oh, the BCS is going to fix everything. And then, a year later, the exact same people were saying, oh, no, we didn't want this, even though it's exactly what they wanted because it's hurting them now. And we're going to see that with the college playoff. We saw it last year with Baylor and TCU. Houston could have gone undefeated, and they could have gone 12-0, 13-0. And not gotten in the top four, and then we'd have more argument and discussion.
Yeah, about how we need to expand
the playoff
even more.
Right.
Yeah, exactly right. Just like the NCAA tournament in basketball, what is 64 now? It's what, 80 now?
Yeah, I mean,
the funny thing is
the statistics on who actually ends up in the Elite Eight or the Final Four is exactly who they seeded. At the very beginning, there is no 16 seed showing up in the Final Four. There's no 12 seed showing up in the Final Four. They may get a little bit, but it's not happening.
Never. They never have. That's exactly right. I was thinking about that before we talked earlier, or before I got on, and I was thinking about, what we're going to talk about on here. And I started thinking about, the NCAA tournament. And I remember a statistic that really, year in, year out, you're either one or two seed.
Yeah. Exactly. And just, I don't know, it's kind of a shame to see kind of the direction it's going. But before we get too far down the rabbit hole here, I want to ask you just another question about Tech football in general. I know you follow all the games very closely. I know you're I see all your tweets and I see all your Facebook posts. What do you think about the overall direction of Tech football right now? I mean, how's your feeling about it? Feel free to compare to the last regime, better or worse or anything like that.
Well, anything's better from the last regime.
That's my boy right there.
Hey, I'm like Mark Levin. Yes, I said it. Anyway, anything's better than that last regime. I really truly believe that. You know, I mean, just think about it. How many seniors did we have this year? We don't have very many seniors. Last year, we had no seniors. And those two classes that the last regime had, there were 29, 30 scholarship players that were signed on signing day. And where are they? They're gone. And you can't win with a bunch of freshmen, especially, okay, you might be able to win at Alabama with a bunch of freshmen. You might be able to win at LSU with a bunch of freshmen or Texas. But you're not going to win at TCU, Baylor, Tech, Oklahoma State with a bunch of freshmen. You're not going to. I'm sorry. I don't care who you are as a coach. You're not going to win because you're not going to get the number one studs, you know, athletes-wise. It's going to take a couple years, and I think that's where we're at. I've seen a lot of progress from even last year, especially offensively. You know, we still have a lot of things to work on, you know, drops. We still have a lot of drops. And I know that they're working really hard on that.
Yeah, and
sometimes I think it's the kid. If he drops the ball, put somebody else in. I know Mike Leach would.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I did not grow up a Tech fan, so the air raid was new to me by a lot. And seeing y'all be fourth and three on your own 35 and y'all go for it, and a lot of times y'all did a little spacing play where you run up 4 yards, turn around, the ball's right there, and y'all convert for the first down. It's like I was always shocked. I was like, what is he doing, as in Mike Leach? And it always seems like y'all caught the ball almost every single time, whether it was Welker, whether it was you, whether it was Glover, whether it was – Mac, whether it was Francis, whoever it was on down the line, it was one of the things that y'all had great ball catching ability, that y'all could secure the ball, even going up for a ball, contested ball, that y'all would pull it down. And I think you're right. No one around them hits, lets it get it in, too deep off the chest pad or whatever. And I just don't know how you fix that, especially with Kingsbury saying he's doing everything that, Leach did with his receivers.
Right. Sometimes it's just the kid. It really is. I mean, there are a lot of kids that came through that were supposedly 4- or 5-star recruits, or I don't think we ever got a 5-star, but they were supposedly 4-star receivers. And I mean, they couldn't chew and walk at the same time, it was really awful to see. And, especially back then, nobody threw the football like they do now. I mean, everybody should be able to catch the football now. I mean, all high schools, that's all they do is throw the football, Yeah. So I don't know. I've talked to them, and they've said to me, that's the first thing they look at me and say, I don't know what we can do to get these kids to catch the football. I said, well, I know one, just don't play them. Play whoever.
I mean, how is that? How was your mindset going out there, when a ball was thrown to you?
Well, you don't think about it, really. You just – well,
I mean, is it an attitude? Is it a mental preparation thing? Is it
Exactly. It's mental attitude. It's all mental is all it is. It's the ball's in the air, and if you don't catch it, then you might not play again. That's pretty simple as that, That was our offense. That's what we were going to do. We weren't going to run the football. We weren't throwing to look pretty. We were throwing to make first downs and get upfield and score touchdowns. And when the ball came to us, we better catch it. And not only that, we as a receiving group, a lot of passes, a lot of targets didn't really come. I mean, you would think, as throwing the ball every down, targets coming your way all the time. Well, yeah, it did, but no, it didn't, because you had Wes Welker out there, like I said earlier. You had Wes out there. You have Carlos out there. They're catching the ball, and it all kind of trickles down. So, if the ball's coming your way, you better make that opportunity, because you might not get another chance.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if that's the problem with what's been going on. And they've done a lot better job this year. They caught the ball way better than they did last year. Way better. I know we still had some issues with drops and stuff, but, you know, as an overall offense, we did a lot better at that point. You know, and going back to what you're saying about how our team's going, I think we're going the right direction, you know. I mean, the first year, I think we were pretty lucky to win 8 games, really, to tell you the truth. I think the Big 12 was kind of a little bit lacking at that during that year. TCU wasn't as great as they were. Baylor was, but they weren't as good as they are now. Oklahoma State was not that – I guess maybe they were a little bit okay, but I'm pretty sure Oklahoma wasn't that great. You know, so then the next year there were – everybody got a lot better. You know, West Virginia was really pretty good. They should have beat Alabama last year. So it was tough. We were still young, and we didn't have those seniors that we should have had. And that's what kind of, you know, gave us a bad taste in our mouth last year. And, you know, this year I was kind of nervous about that Arkansas game. When we won that Arkansas game, I was like, well, I think we're going to be a lot better. We still need some improvement on defense, obviously. Just tackling and covering, that's the two main things, I think. Just very basic tackling, cover.
Same thing we always say.
Right. Tackle, cover.
You'd be surprised listening to Mike Smith press conference when he was DC and last year, and listening to Gibbs this year, and it's almost word for word. It's crazy. I might have to do something with that and put it up.
I think I tweeted out one thing to the writer there in Lubbock. And
Don.
Yeah, Don. And I just said, can we find somebody to cover? Can we just find anybody? I mean, it didn't matter. And he was like, well, okay, dude, who? Everybody's hurt. And I said, well, I don't care if the guy came off from the street. I mean, he can't be any worse than a guy that we have out there right now. I'm not going to say the name, but I'm just
– We got a kicker out of the stands. We can get anybody out of the stands.
Hey, I mean, it was kind of a joking thing, but I mean, it was, and I'm not saying this is any coach's fault at all. I mean, it just, and I hate to badmouth kids and whatnot, but I mean, there's a thing that you have to do, and that's do your job and do it well and do the best you can. And sometimes I didn't think that was going down.
Well, again, we could be on forever. I may beg you and off the air to come back soon and you know, do a bowl prep with us or something and share some more stories, because this could go on. You know, we'll have to get some beer going next time. Who knows? Yeah. We may try to do it live. I think we're all in the Dallas area. We could do that.
I'm here in Rockwall, and
I'm in Allen, and I think Jonathan's somewhere in Dallas.
Yeah, I'm in Bedford.
Yeah, so, you know,
we'll let you talk next time, Jonathan.
I'll try.
Yeah, I just need to let him moderate, because I love Jonathan. He's on with the pod almost every week with me, and he's a great sport. I love his insight, but yeah, it seems like I always hijack the conversation when there's a former player on. I'm just like, I just got to get in.
Y'all do a good job. I've watched or I've read Viva the Matador quite a bit, and me and my dad's always like, hey, I looked at Viva the Matador the other day, and da-da-da-da, and I got him on Twitter, which he's not well, you know, he's not that good of any kind of social media type stuff. But he's got on Twitter, and he really likes it, and he keeps up, you know, mainly with recruiting and just kind of sometimes seeing what y'all have to say and whatnot. And sometimes he gets mad, sometimes he cusses y'all, and sometimes because he's an old coach, you know. So,
hey, we love it. Any listenership is good listenership or readership. So
yeah, sure is, especially for the Red Raiders.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, do you have anything before we close?
No, I think you covered pretty much everything.
Oh, well, awesome.
For now.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to really try to get you back on here soon before the for the bowl game at least. But everybody, thank you, Mickey, for coming on. If you want to follow Mickey on Twitter, he is at MickeyP86. And be sure to give him a follow, see what he's got going on. I you know, during football season, you know, he's a great resource to either drive you nuts or be like, yeah, that's what I think. So,
yeah. And, if you're not a conservative, you probably don't want to follow me anyway.
It's kind of par for the course. It'll be all right. So, but again, thank you, Mickey. Thank you, Jonathan. I really appreciate y'all both being here. We'll get to, thank y'all again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mickey.